From the heart of our nation's capital, here's Family Research Council President Tony Perkins.
Good afternoon and welcome to Washington Watch, broadcasting from the heart of our nation's capital. We're going to bring you the latest insights, analysis, and interviews on the most pressing issues facing you and your family. So for the next hour, we're going to navigate the conflict and the complexities of our nation's capital with clarity and integrity and a relentless pursuit of truth. Washington Watch starts now.
I am filled with the gratitude for the outpouring of support we've received from all across our great country. But the time has now come to suspend my campaign.
That was former South Carolina governor and Republican presidential candidate Nikki Haley ending her campaign after yesterday's Super Tuesday's results. What insights can we glean from the outcomes of Super Tuesday? Well, FRC Action's Matt Carpenter will join me later for that conversation. But first, we turn our attention to the budget deal that just passed the House, albeit with tepid Republican support.
We're not going to get everything that we want. We want to cut spending. We want to limit the size and scope of the federal government. The reality right now is we have divided government. We have a two-vote majority.
That was House Speaker Mike Johnson. We'll get more from the Hill when we're joined by Nebraska Senator Pete Ricketts in just a moment. In international affairs.
So before I begin today, I must address the humanitarian crisis in Gaza. What we are seeing every day in Gaza is devastating, and the Israeli government must do more to significantly increase the flow of aid. No excuses.
That was Vice President Kamala Harris on Sunday. So let me interpret what she said. We are against Hamas, but we're against Israel neutralizing the threat Hamas. So whose side are they on? Now, this is the same thinking that gives us the so-called two-state solution that is no solution. Former U.S. Ambassador to Israel David Friedman will join us to shed light on the subject. And today we continue looking at the open border and how the Biden administration is facilitating illegal immigrants' entry into the country.
NGOs across the country are freely taking taxpayer dollars to facilitate these crimes. Due to undercover reporting, NGOs in my district within Pima County have been exposed. I am diligently working behind the scenes to help put an end to it.
That was Arizona State Representative Justine Wadsack. Millions of your tax dollars are apparently facilitating this invasion through nonprofit corporations. Texas Congressman Lance Gooden joins us to explore how nonprofit organizations are facilitating the Biden administration's border blitz. And finally, brace yourselves for a revelation from secret files that promise to shock. Leaked files from the World Professional Association for Transgender Health show the horrific dangers for children when the left's ideological activism, untethered to truth and ethics, mix with medicine and science. Dr. Quentin Van Meter, member of the Executive Committee of the American College of Pediatricians, joins us for that conversation. But before we dive into today's issues, let me remind you the bedrock principles that guide us here at Washington Watch: faith, family, and freedom. And these are not just words, but values that form the very foundation of our nation's greatness. So whether you're joining us from the heart of D.C. or from the heartland of America, I encourage you to take what you learn to stand up, speak up, and be a part of the solution. Well, following yesterday's Super Tuesday results and the withdrawal of Nikki Haley from the Republican race, former President Donald Trump appears all but assured to face a rematch against incumbent President Joe Biden as the 8 month slog toward the general election vote now kicks off. What can we expect from the upcoming campaign that serves as a referendum on the Biden administration's handling of issues including inflation, Israel, immigration, and the sanctity of human life? Join me now to discuss this and much more, Senator Pete Ricketts from Nebraska. He serves on three Senate committees, including the Senate Foreign Relations Committee. Senator Ricketts, welcome back to the program. Great to see you.
Thank you very much for having me on.
So let me first get your reaction to Super Tuesday's results.
Well, it's very clear the voters have spoken. They've said Donald Trump is our nominee. And now it's time for all of us as Republicans to rally around Donald Trump to be able to beat Joe Biden. This whole weekend of Bernie's thing at the White House has got to end. We got to have real leadership, somebody who knows how to address the pressing issues we've got in our nation, someone who has got a demonstrated track record, for example, of closing the border. Donald Trump brought border crossings to a 45-year low, where Biden has allowed our border to be completely open. And also, we've seen the huge inflation under Joe Biden, the reckless spending. And we know Donald Trump will address those and show leadership there, as well as project strength on the world stage. So it really is time for everybody in the Republican Party to get behind Donald Trump and make sure that we beat Joe Biden in November.
So let me take on a couple of those issues. Are you surprised that immigration has risen to the number one issue at the forefront of voters' minds?
Well, if there's a surprise there, it's because the mainstream media has not been covering this issue. So it's not become the number one issue because the mainstream media is all over. It's just the opposite. They refuse to cover many of the important things that are going on there. You know, I'll just give you one example. President Biden is abusing an authority he has called parole that allows him to bring foreigners into our country. Under the Obama and Trump administration, this happened about 5,600 times a year. Last year, Joe Biden let 1.2 million illegal aliens into our country using the parole function, including Jose Ibarra, who's been accused of killing Lakin Riley, the young Georgia nursing student who was just killed. He was let into this country on this parole program, and now we have these horrible consequences. And this is not the only case. It's not right. It's got people mad.
In particular, in that case, and we're going to explore this a little bit later with Texas Congressman Gooden, that was facilitated by an NGO that was receiving federal money, apparently. So we have money facilitating those coming into this country illegally to do harm to American citizens. And I think you're absolutely right. It's not happening because the media covered it, but because they didn't cover it. And so that raises another question. The media, the legacy media that's out there, does this show that they've lost their impact on the American people because they cannot be trusted?
Well, I think that it does show that their credibility is very low, and that's why people go to other sources to be able to find out their news. I mean, if we're all wondering why young people especially are going to Twitter to get their news, it's because the media is doing such a poor job of presenting the information that we need as citizens to be able to make good decisions with regard to holding our government accountable. And this issue at the southern border is just one example, but we all know that the media is biased far, far, far to the left. They only report it from their perspective, and people get frustrated with that, and so they go look other places.
Yeah. Let's talk. You mentioned out-of-control spending. So the House just voted to pass six of the funding bills. This is a big package, $468 billion. It had tepid support among Republicans in the House. I mean, is this business as usual?
Well, unfortunately, this business has become all too usual. You know, our regular appropriations process would have us pass all these bills individually and do it before September 30th. That hasn't happened since 1997. That's how broken this system is. And in this case, the Senate Appropriations Committee passed out all 12 of their bills in June and July, and Chuck Schumer sat on them. We didn't take our first votes on them until November 1st, a full 30 days after the end of our fiscal year. And then we voted on three of them that were lumped together. And he hasn't allowed us to take another single vote on any one of those since November 1st. It's just a terrible example of how Chuck Schumer is gaming the system for his own personal aggrandizement, his power, so he can write these bills, and really not allowing our system to work the way it should be. And if we're going to get our spending under control, we've got to have a regular system where we can vote on these bills individually, offer amendments. But that is just not happening with Chuck Schumer.
All right. So, I mean, people are sitting out there saying, how can one man stop 99 other members of the Senate? You're elected by all the people of Nebraska. You got two senators from Nebraska. Every state's the same. How is it that the system has allowed one man to have so much control? And how do we fix that?
Yeah, it didn't used to be that way. The power in the Senate was much more dispersed before, to committee chairs. you know, when you had a leader, they would generally be respectful of what the committee chair had done with regard to their bills. But that's not been the case with Chuck Schumer. He has totally consolidated power, and his members allow him to get away with it. You know, the Democrats have the majority in the Senate, so they elect Chuck Schumer, and Chuck Schumer then gets all the benefits of having being leader, which means he basically dictates not only to us, but to them as well. And, you know, I do feel that there are Democrats who want to see a change in this, but they're all afraid of Chuck Schumer. He rules them with an iron fist, and so they don't step out of line. You'll notice they vote very uniformly. They're very disciplined. We've got to have a change. We will have an opportunity with our new Republican leader in the elections we'll have in November to start working on how we reform the system.
So first off, people have to go vote. Republicans will have to gain control of the Senate, have the majority so that they can then lead forward. Will the Republicans do it differently in terms of moving it back to the way it should be, where every senator has a voice in the process? I mean, it's got to be frustrating for you. I mean, you were a governor. You know what it's like to actually run something. And here in the United States Senate, you're deprived of the voice and the vote that the people of Nebraska have given you.
Yeah, as governor, we kept the growth of government to 2.8% a year. And we had a regular appropriations process to be able to do that. My hope, and this is what I'll be looking for when I talk to the candidates who want to be our next leader, is that we will go back to a regular appropriations process, have that commitment to do all 12 individually, and be able to offer amendments as one of the ways that we can go back to a regular order in the Senate. And of course, that will depend upon us taking the majority in this election cycle, but we've got a lot of great candidates and a lot of great pickup opportunities in different states. So I'm very excited about the opportunity that we as Republicans will be able to lead the way on how we can reform the system and bring it back to the way it used to be.
Senator Ricketts, without that, without reforming the system, we're going to continue we're on track every 100 days adding another $1 trillion to our nation's debt. I mean, I don't foresee that changing unless we change the way Washington, D.C. operates.
Well, Tony, you have hit upon something that apparently most folks around here haven't gotten, which is if you want a different result, you got to have a different process. Again, being a governor, we were all about good process, and that's what we have to have here in D.C. We've got to start fixing the system if we're going to get different results, because we've known for the last, 26 years, if we do it the same way, it is not going to work. So we got to have a new system. We got to try things differently to get our handle on the spending, because as you point out, we've got almost $34 trillion in debt. It's like having a second mortgage on every family in this country. We got to get that fixed. We got to get under control.
Yeah. Well, I'd like to see more senators like yourself, former governors, chief executives that have had to actually balance budgets, and business people who know how to make things work as well. Senator Rick, it's always great to see you. Thanks so much for joining us today.
Great. Thank you very much for having me on.
All right. Senator Pete Ricketts of Nebraska. Really, you need to look when you go to the polls. Number one, look where they stand on the issues. Of course, we're going to talk a little bit later. We've got some resources available to help you on that. Where they stand on the issues, but what's their experience? You know, when Jethro talked to Moses about selecting good leaders, the first thing was that they were able. They knew what to do. They were godly men. They weren't going to steal and cheat and take bribes. That's pretty good criteria. All right, coming up after the break, former U.S. ambassador to Israel, David Friedman, joins me. Don't go away.
Christians must be sure to faithfully think about the issues that have taken our culture and many of our churches by storm from a biblical perspective. Family Research Council's David Clawson, along with co-authors Denny Burke and Colin Smothers, released a new book, Male and Female, He Created Them, a study on gender, sexuality, and marriage to help Christians better grasp the Bible's teaching about these issues. This study presents a biblical view of homosexuality, transgenderism, and marriage. With this new resource, readers will be given guidance on specific questions related to preferred pronouns, identity, intersex conditions, and other matters that our churches must be discipling their members to respond to with love and biblical conviction. As part of the study, readers have access to supplemental videos by Dr. Albert Moeller, Dr. Heath Lambert, Reverend H.B. Charles, Dr. Christopher Yuan, Dr. Rosaria Butterfield, and others that expand and elaborate the themes of each chapter. To purchase a copy, go to hecreatedthem.org.
Today we find that global persecutions of Christians is growing more menacing every year. Family Research Council's Leila Gilbert, Ariel Del Turco, and Lieutenant General Jerry Boykin's book, Heroic Faith, shares personal stories from those who have endured religious persecution and gives a close look at the dire situations Christians often face due to dangerous and sometimes deadly opposition to their faith. The book's true stories of persistence and faithfulness amidst crisis offer inspiration and hope. Heroic Faith also provides insights into the ideologies driving the hostility and persecution, what steps the U.S. government might take to help, and how readers can best respond to the struggles of the faithful. It is critical for us to learn from our brothers and sisters who are suffering deeply and to do whatever we can to help. You can get your copy of Heroic Faith wherever books are sold or by going to frc.org/heroicfaith. Again, that's frc.org/heroicfaith. Men are constantly told that there is no place for their thoughts and concerns about abortion. However, this attitude ignores the fact that both women and men are deeply and personally affected by abortion. Furthermore, one does not have to be a woman to know that abortion ends the life of an innocent, unborn child. Every man has a role to play in protecting unborn lives and supporting the mothers in their families and greater community, which is why FRC's Center for Human Dignity has released a resource titled A Man's Guide to Standing for Life. This resource was created to help men positively address the topic of life. This guide will equip men with phrases to utilize or avoid, as well as practical tips for helping to protect life and the expectant mother or unborn child he knows. Every man has the opportunity to be an unborn baby's hero by stepping in to support a mother and speaking up for her child's life. Get this free guide at frc.org/prolifemen to learn more about the important role men play in protecting unborn lives.
Welcome back to Washington Watch, the website, TonyPerkins.com. Resources there for you and contact information for our guest. Well, in international affairs, earlier this week, Vice President Kamala Harris met with Benny Gantz, a member of the Israeli's wartime cabinet. Now, this sparked some intrigue. Some interpret this as an attempt to undermine Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu. But before the meeting, Harris made this comment.
Israel has a right to defend itself. Far too many Palestinian civilians, innocent civilians, have been killed. We need to get more aid in. We need to get the hostages out. And that remains our position.
Huh. It sounds like they want both sides. They want to stand on both sides. I mean, this is the same illogical thinking that suggests a two-state solution in Israel will solve the conflict in the Middle East. Look, the reason you have casualties, civilian casualties, which everyone wants to avoid, but Hamas is hiding behind them. And so if you're going to neutralize Hamas and eliminate the threat, why not call upon them? This is becoming very, very difficult as America distances itself from its most strategic ally politically, and I would say spiritually, our most significant ally, Israel. Joining me now to discuss this is David Friedman, who served as U.S. ambassador to Israel during the Trump administration, where he was a part of a group responsible for the Abraham Accords and moving the U.S. embassy to Jerusalem. He is the founder of the Friedman Center for Peace Through Strength and the author of the book Sledgehammer, How Breaking with the Past Brought Peace to the Middle East. Ambassador Friedman, welcome back to Washington Watch. Great to see you.
Yeah, great to see you, Tony. Thanks. Great to be with you again.
So I'm just going to ask you, I mean, it sounds like every time this administration speaks, they want to be on both sides. They support everybody, ice cream for everyone. But you got to take a side on this. There is right and there is wrong. And I think this is the approach that leads us to this two-state solution, which we know is not a solution.
Look, I think this was always Hamas's strategy that, in the aftermath of the attack, there'll be great sympathy for Israel. But over time, as Hamas would continue to throw civilians into harm's way, and as the American political situation would adjust, Biden would get softer. I think that was their strategy, and they were right, unfortunately, in that strategy, because look how we started. We started early on, October 7th, 8th, and 9th. The messages were very simple. Hamas, you need to release all the hostages. and you need to surrender, and then there'll be a ceasefire. That's how we end this. Release the hostages and surrender. Now we're talking about, you know, we want a ceasefire. We want the hostages released. We want the civilians protected. We want humanitarian aid brought in. We have a laundry list of things which just, you know, enables Hamas to continue to resist. I mean, they're looking at this. They're watching Biden and Harris closer than anybody. And as they see them grow soft, they recalibrate their bargaining positions so that now if you saw kind of their latest demands are absurd. Their latest demands are essentially that they win the war.
Right.
That Israel leaves Gaza, and that's it.
So, Ambassador, let me ask you this question, because I know you're close to Prime Minister Netanyahu. What would bring this to an end? What would bring this war to an end?
Yeah, I don't think things have changed much over the last 152 days. I mean, you need to get the hostages out. You need information in the first place on how many hostages are left. I mean, Israel doesn't even know. Doesn't even know what they're negotiating for. Normally, under these circumstances, the International Red Cross comes in and does an inventory and talks to people and brings them medicine. The Red Cross has completely fallen down on the job here. So you need to know what you're negotiating for, and you need to get Hamas out of the Gaza Strip, and you need to create a transitional period for Israel to be in charge and perhaps, under the right circumstances, you know, share a responsibility with others. But that's it. I mean, if Hamas, you know, leaves this battle intact in some way, they still have a few battalions left, they still have plenty of terrorists, you know, running around the Gaza Strip. If they can get their band back together again, and if they can negotiate to, you know, for the release of some of their premier criminals that are sitting in Israeli jails, they'll book this as a win. And that's dangerous for Israel. It's dangerous for the entire world. It shows that terrorism wins, and that message will resonate throughout the world, including the enemies of America as well.
So, Ambassador, if their hostages were released and Hamas said, you know what, we're going to put the Palestinian people before our own interest, and we're going to lay down our arms and we're going to leave and negotiate someplace where they could go and escape, it would be over.
Yeah, it'll be over the next day. I mean, you'd have some cleanup work to do, but that would be it. I mean, that's all. And I believe that, you know, as painful as it would be, I think Israel would probably allow their leaders to have safe passage to some other, you know, godforsaken place. I don't know, Tunis, Algeria, one of those
places. Of course, nobody's going to take them. Nobody wants them. Because they probably stir up trouble somewhere else and bring heat onto to wherever it was they were dwelling. I mean, but I'm going to go, if we just got a couple minutes left, Ambassador, this idea of a two-state solution, isn't that what we've been witnessing since 2007 when Hamas had free reign over Gaza? I mean, they were the elected leaders of Gaza.
Yeah, look, that was the dry run, if you will, of a two-state solution, right? They were given, the Palestinian people were given all of Gaza, right? Not a single Jew lives there. Not a single Israeli soldier operates within there. They had the whole thing, and it's this beautiful strip of land, Western view on the Mediterranean Sea. You get to watch the sunset, you know, on the Mediterranean. They were given tons of money by the UN, by the United States, by the European Union, by Qatar, by other countries. They took all that money and all that opportunity, and they used it to build the most complex and sophisticated network of terror tunnels and rockets anywhere in the world. They gave themselves the greatest home court advantage in the world for hand-to-hand, house-to-house combat. That's what they did with all the money. So we know now with certainty. We could have speculated about it, you know, 10, 15 years ago. Now we know with certainty that a Palestinian state is a terror state, is an existential threat to the state of Israel. And why the United States government, the State Department, continues to advocate for this outcome is beyond me. It will just get us back to the same place.
Yeah, it's insanity. Ambassador, I know actually we're going to meet up next week in Israel. I look forward to seeing you there. Thank you so much for joining us today.
Well, I look forward to seeing you as well. And God bless you and have a safe trip.
All right. Ambassador David Friedman, I will be in Israel next week, going on a solidarity trip to show that evangelicals stand with Israel. And if you'd like to join me as we pray while we're there, simply text the word Israel to 67742, Israel to 67742, and we can connect and you can join me as we pray as we move through Israel next week. In fact, I'll be broadcasting Washington Watch a couple of days there in Israel. All right, stick around. We're coming back with more Washington Watch on the other side of the break.
Christians must be sure to faithfully think about the issues that have taken our culture and many of our churches by storm from a biblical perspective. Family Research Council's David Clawson, along with co-authors Denny Burke and Colin Smothers, released a new book, Male and Female, He Created Them, a study on gender, sexuality, and marriage to help Christians better grasp the Bible's teaching about these issues. This study presents a biblical view of homosexuality, transgenderism, and marriage. With this new resource, readers will be given guidance on specific questions related to preferred pronouns, identity, intersex conditions, and other matters that our churches must be discipling their members to respond to with love and biblical conviction. As part of the study, readers have access to supplemental videos by Dr. Albert Moeller, Dr. Heath Lambert, Reverend H.B. Charles, Dr. Christopher Yuan, Dr. Rosaria Butterfield, and others that expand and elaborate the themes of each chapter. To purchase a copy, go to hecreatedthem.org.
Today we find that global persecutions of Christians is growing more menacing every year. Family Research Council's Lila Gilbert, Ariel Del Turco, and Lieutenant General Jerry Boykin's book, Heroic Faith, shares personal stories from those who have endured religious persecution and gives a close look at the dire situations Christians often face due to dangerous and sometimes deadly opposition to their faith. The book's true stories of persistence and faithfulness amidst crisis offer inspiration and hope. Heroic Faith also provides insights into the ideologies driving the hostility and persecution, what steps the U.S. government might take to help, and how readers can best respond to the struggles of the faithful. It is critical for us to learn from our brothers and sisters who are suffering deeply and to do whatever we can to help. You can get your copy of Heroic Faith wherever books are sold or by going to frc.org/heroicfaith. Again, that's frc.org/heroicfaith.
Welcome back to Washington Watch. As I was mentioning going into the break, I will be in Israel next week. In fact, we'll be broadcasting Monday and Wednesday from Jerusalem. But I'll be going down to the Gaza corridor, be meeting with Israeli leaders, political and church leaders, as well as we'll be meeting with family members of the victims of October the 7th. And we'll be praying while we're there. We'll be joining in solidarity with Israel, praying for Israel and praying for America as we are distancing ourselves from Israel. And I think that comes with dangerous consequences. So if you'd like to join me in that effort by praying and getting updates, just text Israel to 67742. That's Israel to 67742. All right, back here at home, the brutal murder of a nursing student, Lakin Riley, in Georgia last month provides not only a sobering reminder of the consequences of the Biden administration's self-inflicted border crisis. It wasn't here until they came into power. It calls attention to the role that non-governmental organizations, called NGOs, play in facilitating illegal immigration. Covenant House, an NGO supposedly founded to battle teen homelessness, but that also has it's also sponsored drag shows at its locations, was listed as a sponsor address of Jose Abrera, the illegal immigrant who's been accused of murdering Lakin Riley. But this is just one of many NGOs the Biden administration shovels tax dollars to that facilitate illegal immigration. Joining now to discuss this, Congressman Lance Gooden, who has demanded the release of all records related to Abrera. He serves on the House Judiciary Committee, the House Armed Services Committee. He represents the 5th Congressional District of Texas. He's joining us by phone. Congressman Gooden, welcome to Washington Watch.
Thank you so much for having me. It's great to be here.
So, Congressman, what have you found out?
Well, you know, we found out what we've known all along, and that is the United States government, sadly, under the direction of this president, is paying non-governmental organizations to facilitate the invasion of our southern border. And that's been going on since he took office, since he rolled back all the executive orders that President Trump put into place. We had relative peace at the border. And what we've had now is this incentivization of these migrants to come across the border. And these government organizations are also, these NGOs are also incentivized because they're making money for every crosser, everyone that they go down and, quote, take in and help to get across and help to get on an airplane or a bus to wherever it is they're going, they're getting paid by the government, which is crazy to me and crazy to most Americans when they learn how this works. And that's what we what we've seen as the unfortunate fruits of this horrible plan are tragic murders such as Lake and Riley's. We see a rise in crime across our nation, and what these NGOs are doing are facilitating all of this. They're doing it in the name of a good Christian intent, and that is to take care of those who need help. But what they're doing by going down to the border and passing out gift cards and saying, if you can just cross this border, we'll help you go to wherever you're going, then they're actually making this problem worse, and they're making money off the American taxpayer to do it, and that's what they don't want to talk about. And so when I ask for documents to say, show me what are you doing, how much are you spending, how many folks are you helping to get across the border and spread across the United States, they don't want to talk about it. Covenant House is one of them. Catholic Charities is a huge offender and the biggest recipient of taxpayer dollars. They've received billions with a B over the years to set up shop on the border and help facilitate this crisis.
Well,
and none of them want to talk about it when you ask them questions.
On the other side of the border, that would be called a coyote.
That's what they're doing. And, you know, they say people like me are wrong to criticize, that we don't know what we're talking about. And my response is if what you're doing is so great, then why do you refuse to answer any of the questions that members of Congress ask of you? We've sent letters asking for information. They don't want to discuss it because what they don't want is the American people to understand just how bad things are, how many of these NGOs are bankrolling their operation with taxpayer dollars and helping to fund this invasion.
So is there no accountability or oversight of the NGOs getting this federal money?
Well, as long as Joe Biden is in the White House and encouraging it, I don't believe there is, no. And, you know, it's so deceptive because the president will stand up and say that Republicans are standing in the way. If they would just give me more money for border security, then we'd have an easier time down at the border. But what he's not telling you is he doesn't want money for border security. He wants money to process migrants. There's no desire on the part of this White House to actually stem the flow of these crossings, and that's what our problem is, and
right.
That's why we've had this tragic murder. That's why we have members of the terrorist watch list coming across, and these are just the ones that get caught. We have no idea who's coming across our southern border. The olden days of people coming from Mexico just to have a better life, those days have passed. Yes, the crossers do include those good people that are looking for a better life, but frankly, we don't know who's coming across the border. When you see 50,000 military-aged male Chinese nationals coming across, you see people coming from places like Yemen. This is the country that's firing missiles up and down the Red Sea on our ships. They're sending folks across the southern border. The Iranians are doing it. It's terrible. It's going to only get worse, and the only way that this Biden White House does anything is if there's enough political pressure or some polling data showing them that they've just got to take some kind of action before November.
Congressman, we've got to leave it there. Thanks so much. Very insightful. Appreciate you joining us today.
Thank you. Take care. Appreciate you.
Absolutely. Congressman Gooden of Texas. I don't have time, but I want to tell you about an encounter I had with a TSA agent this morning discussing this very thing. All right, folks, don't go away. We're coming back after this.
Christians must be sure to faithfully think about the issues that have taken our culture and many of our churches by storm from a biblical perspective. Family Research Council's David Clawson, along with co-authors Denny Burke and Colin Smothers, released a new book, Male and Female, He Created Them, a study on gender, sexuality, and marriage to help Christians better grasp the Bible's teaching about these issues. This study presents a biblical view of homosexuality, transgenderism, and marriage. With this new resource, readers will be given guidance on specific specific questions related to preferred pronouns, identity, intersex conditions, and other matters that our churches must be discipling their members to respond to with love and biblical conviction. As part of the study, readers have access to supplemental videos by Dr. Albert Moeller, Dr. Heath Lambert, Reverend H.B. Charles, Dr. Christopher Yuan, Dr. Rosaria Butterfield, and others that expand and elaborate the themes of each chapter. To purchase a copy, go to hecreatedthem.org.
Today we find that global persecutions of Christians is growing more menacing every year. Family Research Council's Leela Gilbert, Ariel Del Turco, and Lieutenant General Jerry Boykin's book, Heroic Faith, shares personal stories from those who have endured religious persecution and gives a close look at the dire situations Christians often face due to dangerous and sometimes deadly opposition to their faith. The book's true stories of persistence and faithfulness amidst crisis offer inspiration and hope. Heroic Faith also provides insights into the ideologies driving the hostility and persecution, what steps the U.S. government might take to help, and how readers can best respond to the struggles of the faithful. It is critical for us to learn from our brothers and sisters who are suffering deeply and to do whatever we can to help. You can get your copy of Heroic Faith wherever books are sold, or by going to frc.org/heroicfaith. Again, that's frc.org/heroicfaith. Men are constantly told that there is no place for their thoughts and concerns about abortion. However, this attitude ignores the fact that both women and men are deeply and personally affected by abortion. Furthermore, one does not have to be a woman to know that abortion ends the life of an innocent, unborn child. Every man has a role to play in protecting unborn lives and supporting the mothers in their families and greater community, which is why FRC's Center for Human Dignity has released a resource titled A Man's Guide to Standing for Life. This resource was created to help men positively address the topic of life. This guide will equip men with phrases to utilize or avoid, as well as practical tips for helping to protect life and the expectant mother or unborn child he knows. Every man has the opportunity to be an unborn baby's hero by stepping in to support a mother and speaking up for her child's life. Get this free guide at frc.org/pro-life-men to learn more about the important role men play in protecting unborn lives.
All right, to weigh in on the border issue, it's still not settled. This first tranche of spending bills, these six bills that were voted out of the House today, there's six more coming. And those will be the border issue. So text the word border to 67742. That's border to 67742. Sign the petition that we're going to deliver next week to the Republican leadership to stand firm on the border. We've got to address this issue. All right, tomorrow night, President Biden will give his State of the Union address. But what about the state of faith, family, and freedom in our nation?
The state of faith, family, and freedom in America is being tested and tried to a degree that is almost unrivaled in our history. But our confidence and hope in the future has never been more solid.
All right, I know that guy. That was me. I address it in the State of Faith, Family, and Freedom. You can actually see the address. Simply text ADDRESS to 67742. That's text the word ADDRESS to 67742, and you'll get a link to FRC's State of Faith, Family, and Freedom address. Well, our word for today comes from Leviticus chapter 22. And when anyone offers a sacrifice of peace offerings to the Lord to fulfill a vow or a free will offering from the herd or from the flock to be accepted, it must be perfect. There shall be no blemish in it. Animals blind or disabled or mutilated or having a discharge or an itch or scabs, you shall not offer to the Lord or give it to them, to the Lord, as a food offering on the altar. What's God saying here? Well, he's telling the children of Israel, don't worship me with the rejects. God expects, actually demands, our very best. Now, keep in mind what worship of God actually entails. Everything. 1 Corinthians 10:31 says, therefore, whether you eat or drink or whatever you do, do all to the glory of God. This is not just about finances and tithing. Although these offerings were costly, it is about giving God our very best. To find out more about our journey through the Bible, go to frc.org/Bible. Well, yesterday's Super Tuesday results effectively narrowed the field to President Trump, former President Trump, and President Biden, a rematch. Most expected that this was going to be the outcome. Well, earlier today, former U.N. Ambassador Nikki Haley officially announced that she was suspending her campaign for the GOP nomination. What can we make of yesterday's outcome of the Super Tuesday election? Joining me now to help break down the results is FRC Action Director Matt Carpenter. Matt, welcome back to Washington Watch.
Great to be with you, Tony. Thanks for having me.
All right, Matt, let's hit the big ones. What are your takeaways from Super Tuesday?
Well, obviously, you know, we're looking at, I think, what's going to end up being a Biden and Trump matchup. There wasn't too much news made on the on that front. Biden won most of the Democrat contests. Trump won most of the Republican contests, with the exception of Vermont. But beneath the surface, there is quite a bit, actually, to look at here. Biden becomes the first incumbent to lose a primary in 44 years. Believe it or not, he actually lost American Samoa. I don't think a contest many people were paying attention to. There weren't many voters in this contest, Tony, just I think under 100 last time I checked. But still, it's kind of a bizarre barometer on how the president's doing with his base at this time, where this this little-known long-shot guy, Jason Palmer, still trying to figure out who he is and what he's about, bests President Biden. But I think even more important maybe than that one singular instance is kind of this emerging phenomenon on the Democratic side of this protest vote, this uncommitted block of voters that is taking the time to go and vote in these primaries and register their disfavor with how the president is handling his job in the office. We saw last month in Michigan, 13% of the total vote on the Democratic side of the primary registered as uncommitted. This time in Minnesota, another key state for the upcoming general election, 19% of Democrats voted uncommitted. Now, drilling down a little further here, Tony, if you look at Hennepin County, which is kind of the population center of Minnesota, one out of four voters in Hennepin County, 25%, went for uncommitted over Biden. So there's an emerging problem here, a protest vote for the president, not where you want to be really going into a contested general election where you've got this rebellion kind of emerging in your camp.
Isn't that surrounding the Israeli-Hamas war that's going on, that you have this standoff between Palestinian supporters that are voting or not voting for the president?
So that was, in the Michigan instance, you had Rashida Tlaib made that argument to her supporters in Dearborn, Michigan, which is a heavily majority Muslim population area. And so that was certainly the case there. It looks like, Tony, this has metastasized beyond that. And now you have younger voters and you have other more progressive voters kind of joining in with that protest vote that was in Michigan just a Muslim majority vote, but has now kind of grown. And so we saw a sizable chunk of the Democratic base vote uncommitted. I mentioned Minnesota earlier, but this phenomenon showed up also in Alabama on the Democratic side, in Colorado, in North Carolina, and in Massachusetts as well.
Very, very interesting. All right, very quickly, some specific congressional races that FRC Action and FRC Action PAC were involved in. Give us the rundown on some of those races, faith, family, and freedom-oriented candidates.
Yeah, so one of the states we were looking at last night closely was North Carolina, Tony. Actually, some of the exit polling I saw from North Carolina showed that 52% of GOP primary voters in North Carolina consider themselves evangelical Christians. So you have this population of voters who would fit, a large chunk of them would fit within that spiritually active, governance-engaged conservatives that we've been talking about here. But even more so than that, North Carolina went through a round of redistricting. And so, you know, you kind of play out the demographics of some of these new districts they drew, and the potential House majority next year could run through a state like North Carolina. And so I'm looking at a place like North Carolina's 6th congressional district, where on the Republican side, it's going to be, you know, most prognosticators will tell you North Carolina 6 is a safe GOP seat. But I'm looking at Addison Dowell and Mark Walker are going to go into a runoff in May, so that'll be decided then in North Carolina's 6th congressional district. Also, North Carolina's 8th congressional district, this is another one of those safe GOP seats that's going to help form the next majority, where Mark Harris was just announced a couple hours ago. I think Washington Post and Politico just called it for him. He escaped the runoff threshold there, so he's won the primary, and he's looking in like in a, he's in a good position for November. But also in North Carolina 1, you've got maybe the only toss-up district in the state where you've got freshman Democrat Don Davis, who's voted to the left of that district for some for his tenure so far, is going to take on Republican challenger Lori Buckhout. So a lot's going to run through the Tar Heel state, and there's some good conservatives emerging there for voters to decide on in November.
Yes, and FRC Action had a good night last night with our candidates. Matt Carpenter, great to see you. Thanks so much for the update.
Likewise, Tony. Great to be with you.
All right. Okay, moving on. An investigation into newly leaked files from the World Professional Association for Transgender Health confirmed yet again that what is mistakenly called gender-affirming care betrays both science and medical, best practice in medicine. Now, according to a report from Environmental Progress, internal files show that an organization whose leaders know that they are creating victims by their work. The injuries described in the files include sterilization, loss of sexual function, liver tumors, and even death. Now, despite these outcomes, the American Medical Association, the American Academy of Pediatrics, and thousands of doctors worldwide have hidden behind the guidelines put out by this ideologically driven organization. Join me now to discuss this and more, Dr. Quentin Van Meter. He is a pediatric endocrinologist and immediate past president and now executive committee member of the American College of Pediatricians. Dr. Van Meter, welcome back to Washington Watch.
Always glad to be here. Thanks, Tony.
So give us your response to this explosive report of these leaked files that in many ways confirm what we have thought all along.
Well, it's a very large battering ram that's hit the wall that has previously just been falling down brick by brick over the past several years. WPATH has been hiding all of the information that they know and they willingly discuss among themselves. That their plans for these kids are clearly experimental, not based on science. We have said this in hearings for legislative efforts in a number of states. We've said this in courts where there's a question of a parental custody of a parent who wishes not to transition their child. And we brought this up over and over again, only to be essentially shot down and being told that WPATH is the expert in this. They clearly state that their guidelines are the saving grace, that they save lives, that there are no regrets, that everything else to the contrary is a bald-faced lie and is politically motivated by right-wing conspiracy theorists. That's been their mantra since we've known them on the scene. And now we find out that they know all about these problems within, that we are correct for those of us that have been criticizing it, not because we do not care for transgender kids. We dearly and sincerely care for them and want the best for them and want things that heal them, not harm them. And the WPATH secrets that have now been leaked show that there is no scientific background, that they are living and repeating lies over and over again. It's quite shocking, but to us, it's a gift because it tells the world what we have been trying to say is a very small voice. Hey, this is not good for children. We must put the brakes on like Europe has and get our organizations that have adopted guidelines, such as the American Academy of Pediatrics and the Endocrine Society and the Pediatric Endocrine Society here in the U.S., to take down their guidelines and say, we're going to rethink this. This is a bombshell, and we must take care of this immediately.
But it exposes the fact that many of these entities that are held out as experts have been compromised by the political agendas of these ideologically driven individuals. I mean, this is what happens when this ideology, untethered to truth and ethics, mixes with science. Just because you can do something doesn't mean you should do it. And it leads to horrible outcomes for children. I mean, people, these are kids that can't even, you know, they can't drive, they can't get a tattoo, but we're letting them cut off body parts and change, you know, make them think they're changing their gender?
Within the document, there are conversations that are verified by individuals, high-level individuals in the WPATH organization that say children have the right to make the decisions. The parents don't even know them. The kids, if they want this, this is what they should have because it saves their lives. And then out of the other side of their mouth, they'll say, well, you know, we realize that this kiddo is, you know, doesn't realize what sterilization means. And, you know, how can they really understand that? And it's just, it is amazing to see this come out. This needs to be shouted from the hillsides and hilltops to say, stop, the whole world must stop this nonsense, this insanity. We have hurt hundreds of thousands of children irreparably since this whole process began in the mid-2000s. And we've got to put a stop to it, not in a year or two or three or with lawsuits that take institutions down, but we need to do it today.
So, Dr. Van Meter, let me ask you this question. Do you think that this is explosive enough that this is going to stop the movement in its tracks? Policymakers are going to be forced to look at this. The medical associations, which have given a pass to this, are going to have to stop and rethink it.
That would be the intellectually correct thing to do. I don't know whether or not these organizations and politicians are so entrenched in their beliefs that they don't want to have egg on their face, so they're going to just stand tall and pretend like nothing was released and this is just some bogus conspiracy theory. And it's not, but it's very hard to not realize it's true when you see the actual redacted reports with their conversations recorded. It's been a stellar job by Michael Schellenberger, who did all this in justification of the and research in the background. And Mia Hughes, who's kind of reported out and put this out, is just, it, reading it is just every paragraph you go, oh my gosh, I haven't been wrong on this issue. What we believed was happening has been happening. And this has got to get out to the whole world.
Was there anything in, I mean, I know you know all this stuff, but was there anything in this that even shocked you?
I think what shocked me is the sort of the casual nature of course we knew this is the problem, but what are we going to do? These kids need what they want, and you know they have to get what they want. And it's just the casual flippant conversations that are documented and recorded. It's beyond the pale.
Well, what really shocked me was the number of physicians, surgeons that are doing these gender surgeries, cutting off body parts, creating these new parts, who are transgender themselves. I mean, Yes. This is where you see this mix of ideology that say, yes, I want more people to have to go through this. I mean, they cannot look at this objectively, in my opinion.
There is no way for them to do that. The ideology is embedded so deeply in their minds that I don't think they really care. It is for themselves they're doing this. They're not doing this for the children. I mean, that was a statement by James Cantor, is that this is all about the needs of the adults that are taking these kids to task and ruining their lives forever. And it's like, how did we let this happen?
It's sad. It is absolutely sad. What an indictment against our culture to allow this to occur. Dr. Van Meter, always great to see you. Thank you so much for joining us today.
You're very welcome. Thanks, Tony.
This is sad. It almost leaves you speechless. Something we need to pray about. We need to vote for those who will protect children, not exploit them, and we need to stand for truth. All right, folks, out of time for today, but I pray you'll join us again tomorrow. Until then, I leave you with the words of the Apostle Paul, who says, when you've done everything you can do, when you've prayed, when you've prepared, and when you've taken your stand, don't give up. Just keep standing.
Washington Watch with Tony Perkins is brought to you by Family Research Council and is entirely listener-supported. Portions of the show discussing candidates are brought to you by Family Research Council Action. For more information on anything you've heard today, or to find out how you can partner with us in our ongoing efforts to promote faith, family, and freedom, visit TonyPerkins.com. Also, to leave a comment about Washington Watch, call our watch line at 1-866-372-7234. That's 1-866-372-7234.